Chapter 32. The Shadowlands. The Protector of All the Taglias. Soulcatcher's survival instincts had been honed to a razor's edge by centuries of adventures among peoples who considered her continued good health a liability. She sensed a change in the world long before she had any idea what that change might be, good or ill or indifferent, and ages before she dared hazard a guess as to its cause. At first, it was just that sense. Then, gradually, it became the pressure of a thousand eyes. But she could discover nothing. Her crows could find nothing, either, other than the occasional, unpredictable, flickering glimpse of their quarry, the two deceivers. That was ancient news. Soulcatcher abandoned the hunt immediately. It would not be difficult to get close to the deceivers again. She learned nothing more before nightfall, except that her crows were extremely unsettled, getting more and more nervous, less and less tractable, and increasingly inclined to jump at shadows. They could not make clear the nature of their malaise because they did not understand it themselves. That began to grow clearer as the twilight gathered. Messengers interrupted Soulcatcher's meditations to inform her that several of the murder had fallen prey to a sudden illness.
"Show me."
She made no effort to disguise herself as she followed her birds to the nearest feathered corpse. She picked it up, rolled it carefully in her gloved hands. It was obvious what had killed the crow. Not illness, but a killer shadow. No cadaver looked like one did after a shadow finished with it. But that could not be. It was still light out. Her tame shadows were all in hiding, and there were no rogue shadows around anymore. Nor would wild shadows have wasted themselves on a crow when there was human game in the vicinity. She should have heard Narayan sing and that wretched niece of hers screaming long before any crow. There had been no sound from the bird whatsoever, nor had there been any from any of a half dozen others the murder knew to be gone. The survivors had plenty to say, including stating plainly that they were not about to stray away from her protection.
"How can I fight this if I don't know what it is? If you won't find out for me?"
The crows would not be bullied or cajoled. They were geniuses for birds, which meant they were just bright enough to have noticed that every one of the dead had been completely alone when evil had befallen them. Soulcatcher cursed them, then calmed herself and convinced the most valiant birds that they had to therefore do their scouting in threes and fours until darkness closed in completely. At that point she would have bats and owls and her own shadows available to take over. Darkness came. As the deceivers correctly observe, the darkness always comes. With nightfall came a silent but horribly vicious warfare, with Soulcatcher poised at the eye of the storm. Initially she had to hold on desperately against unknown assailants until her own shadows could bring in enough swift reinforcements. Then, spending shadows profligately, she took the offensive. And when dawn came, and she was almost without supernatural allies because of the cost of the struggle, she gave way to exhaustion, having gained a knowledge of a portion of the truth. They were back. The Black Company were, with new formations, new allies, new sorceries, and still without a dram of mercy in their hearts. These were not the company she had known in younger years, but they were the spiritual children of the cold killers of the olden days. No matter what you tried, it seemed, you could kill only men. The ideal lived on. Ha! An end to the boredom of empire stood at hand. Bravado and pretense did not lessen the inexplicable fear. They had fled onto the plain, and now they were back. That had to mean much more. She needed to interrogate shadows who had existed on the glittering stone during those silent years, when there was time. Before she did anything else, she had to do what she always did so well: survive. She was out here hundreds of miles from any support. She was besieged by things that would not yield to her will or sorcery, and which she could detect, it seemed, only through her own shadows or when one of them attacked her directly. They were as fierce as shadows, but strange. They were more otherworldly than her spirit slaves, and seemed possessed of a higher order of intelligence. Each one she extinguished personally infected her with both a vast sorrow and with the certainty that she was battling only the most feeble of their kind. Always there was a powerful presentiment of demons or demigods to come. What she could not comprehend was why all this frightened her so. There was nothing here more deadly or threatening or bizarre than a thousand perils she had faced before. Nothing here matched the sheer dark menace of the Dominator in his time. There were infrequent moments when she still longed for those dark and ancient times. The Dominator had taken her and all her sisters, had made one of them his wife and another his lover. He had been a strong, hard, cruel man, the Dominator. His empire had been one of cruelty and steel, and Soulcatcher had reveled in its pomp and dark glory, and would never forgive her rival, her last surviving sister, for having brought all that to an end. Blame the death of the Dominator on the White Rose if you wanted. Soulcatcher knew the truth. The Dominator would never have gone down if his whining virgin of a wife had not helped his destruction along. And who had fought and conspired so hard after their resurrection to keep the Dominator in the ground? His loving wife, that was who. She would be back. She would be out there somewhere, wherever the Black Company had been hiding. She was not here yet, but she would be soon. Having been buried alive again would be no impediment to the inevitable, that grim moment when they would settle their differences face to face. Soulcatcher could will herself blind in some quarters, despite centuries of cynical experience. She would not see that fortune could be just as erratic and insane as she was. Soulcatcher's powers of recuperation were tremendous. After a few hours of rest, she rose and started walking northward, her stride long and confident. Tonight she would gather an army of her own shadows around her. Never again would she be as threatened as she had been the night before. So she told herself. By late afternoon her confidence was as high as it ever had been, and fragments of her mind were already peeping past today's crisis to scout out what might be done to sculpt the future. Soulcatcher had long been intimate with the knowledge that horrible things could and did happen to her. But always she had enjoyed the certainty that she would come through everything alive. Chapter 33 Katavar Leave-Taking
Looks clean, Swan said.
Mergen and Tide grunted agreement. I nodded to the Nuang Bao. What he had to say meant something here. His eyes were still as sharp as those of a lad of 15. I was damned near blind in one and could not see out the other. Doge, what do you think? Did they run away, or did they sneak back just in case we sneaked back? Element of surprise no longer my ally, I did not want to run into the Voroshk again. Especially not those old men. They would be bitter and in a mood to drag me down to hell with them.
They went away. They went back to prepare for the onslaught. They know horror and despair are headed their way, but they also know they are strong enough to weather it if they remain calm and work hard.
I suspect I gaped. How do you figure all that?
It's just a matter of mental exercise. Take what we know about them, about sorcerers as a whole, and about human beings in general, and the rest follows. They've been through this before, in a smaller way. They'll have worked out what to do if it happened again. All this empty country, from here to the other side of their Dondapresh, will serve the same function as the cleared ground surrounding a fortress expecting to be besieged.
You've convinced me. Let's just hope they're not so ready that they figure out how to come looking for us after they wrap up their pest problem. As badly as the Shadowgate and nearby barrier had been damaged, I doubted the Voroshk would have much energy to spare for generations. Swan said,
"He had me for a minute, too,
But here comes the argument that proves what I always knew. Uncle Doge is full of shit. A half-dozen billowing black forms had emerged from the vegetation down the slope. They were walking very slowly, two by two, hands extended away from their sides, their flying posts tagging along behind at waist height. I said, "I don't know what the fuck is going on, but I want Goblin and Doge ready for anything. Murgan, you and Ty Day spread out so we can hit them from in front and both sides with fireballs." Me and my pals had three live poles, literally all our band had left. Lady said there were just six usable fireballs between the three. She hoped. One for each of the Varoshk. Swan said, "You sure we really need to round up those spooks? Life would be a lot easier right here, right now. But what happens back home when we've got Soulcatcher coming at us and we yell for Tobo to let loose the Black Hounds, and there ain't no Black Hounds? And the rest of the Unknown Shadows say, 'Fuck that shit, I ain't getting scragged for these guys who wouldn't even try to bring the hounds out of Kadavar.'" Swan growled. Goblin sneered. "A little passion, Captain. I thought you'd lost it all." "When I want shit out of you, Runt, I'll kick it out." "What did he just say?" The Varoshk had stopped coming toward us. One had spoken. And, oh wonder, his words sounded like something I ought to understand. "Say that again, buddy." The sorcerer got the idea. He repeated himself, loudly and slowly, the way you do with the hard of hearing, the dim of wit, and foreigners. "What is that noise?" I asked. I know there were words in there that I should recognize. "Remember Juniper," Goblin said. "It sounds like he's trying to speak what they spoke there." "Makes sense. Bowalk came from Juniper. So listen close." Goblin had served in Juniper, too, a long time ago. "I have a knack for languages. Could I get enough of this one back fast enough to do us any good? We did not have many hours of daylight left." Something began to get past the fact that the Varoshk had a horrible accent and his grammar was atrocious. He butchered tenses and inverted his verbs and subjects. Goblin and I compared notes as we proceeded. The little wizard had never spoken the language well, but he had had no trouble understanding it. "What's going on?" Swan demanded. He was holding one of the bamboo poles. It was getting heavy. "Sounds like they want us to take them with us, that they think the end of the world is coming, and they don't want to participate." Goblin nodded, agreeing. He added a caveat, "But I wouldn't trust them for a second. I'd always assume they were sent to spy on us." "Yes," I said, "I'd do that with just about anybody." Goblin ignored the jibe. "Make them strip, bone naked. Doge and I can go over their clothes like we're looking for nits." "All right, only I'm taking Doge with me to help collect my snail shells." I began telling the Varoshk what they had to do if they really wanted to go with us. They were not pleased. They wanted to argue. I did not argue, even though I hoped to get my hands on a flying post or two so Lady and Tobo could study them. Damn, having a few of those sure would be handy. I told the Varoshk, "If I don't see naked bodies, I'd better see the backs of people getting away. Anybody who isn't doing one or the other by a count of 50 will die where he's standing on his dignity." The language came back to me quite well, though I did not really make my statement that clearly. The two Varoshk, who were probably the brightest, began disrobing almost immediately. They proved to be as pale and blonde as the girls we had seen already, though red with embarrassment and shaking with fury. I watched carefully, not with much interest in their flesh. How much determination they put into something humiliating would give me a hint or two about their sincerity. It was too much for one young woman. She got just far enough for her true sex to become evident before she found that she could not finish. "Better run, girl," I said. And she did. She hopped aboard her flying log and scooted. Her desertion had a definite impact on one of the young men. He changed his mind even though he was already naked. I did not hurry him as he dressed. That left four, three boys and a girl. all in their early to middle teens. I waved uphill, confident that by now Lady would be watching and could guess what I needed. She is clever that way. And shortly a couple of guys were headed downhill, lugging bundles of odds and ends with which to dress our prisoners. They did not yet quite understand their new status. I brought them through the shadow gate one at a time, watching carefully. I did not expect them to try anything, but I am alive at my age because I make a habit of being ready for trouble when it seems most unlikely. I asked, "Anybody got any reason to think whoever goes out the gate is going to get into trouble?" To their further humiliation, the Varoshk kids found themselves with their hands bound behind them as soon as they were dressed. The fellow with the feeble command of Juniper's lingo protested the indignity. "It's only temporary," I assured him, "just while us few are on the outside." I shifted to Taglian. "Mergen, Swan, Tide, you keep these guys on a short leash." Bamboo poles lashed the air. Despite age and its attendant cynicism, those guys could put on a show of enthusiasm, mainly faked. Swan promised me, "Anything happens to you, there won't be anything left of them but grease stains and toenails." "You're a good man, Swan. Doge, you go through first." The elderly Nuang Bao drew the sword Ash Wand and stepped through the damaged shadow gate into Katovar. He positioned himself. I said, "Your turn, goblin." By hand sign, I told Mergen not to be shy about flinging a fireball at surprised targets outside. What followed was anticlimactic. I took a sack around to all the places I remembered seeding earlier and collected snail shells. Those in which something had hidden itself had a distinct feel. My ravens returned when I was involved in the harvest. They reported the Varoshk feverishly preparing for nightfall. They believed our defectors were genuine. Terror and panic were spreading across the world as fast as Varoshk messengers could fly. The birds made the recovery of our shadow companions much easier. They let me know which shells were a waste of time and where to find the ones I had forgotten. We were all back through the shadow gate an hour before sunset. Goblin was still examining the clothing removed from the Varoshk kids. The little wizard piped, "This is some truly amazing material, Croaker. I think it might be sensitive to the thoughts of whoever is wearing it."
"Is it safe?"
"I think it's completely inert, as long as it isn't in contact with whoever is keyed to wear it."
"A little something more for Tobo to play with during all the spare time he's going to have in the middle of a war. Bundle it up. Put it on a mule at the front of the column. We need to get going." I shifted languages, told the unhappy youngsters. "I'm releasing you now. I'm going to bring you back out here, one at a time, so you can get your posts. You won't be allowed to ride them. You'll travel at the rear of our column." I went on to tell them about the dangers of the plane while they were following instructions. Their fear of the shadows gave me a good chance to retain their attention. I tried to impress them that a screw-up on the plane would kill not just the fuck-up, but the whole crew, so they should not expect my people to be gentle if their behavior was unacceptable. I was the last of the company to leave Katovar's soil. Before I departed, I indulged in a little personal ceremony of farewell, or perhaps of exorcism. The youngster capable of some communication wanted to know, "What is the meaning of what you just did?" I tried to explain. He did not get it. In time, I determined that he had never heard of the free companies of Katovar, that he knew almost nothing of the history of his world before his ancestors had taken power, that furthermore, he did not care. He seemed a shallow young man overall. No doubt his companions were much the same. The company was going to be a revelation for them. Lady and I stayed at the end of the road, waiting to make sure we had sealed it successfully against shadow incursions. The sun set. The sense of presence that comes when a large number of killer shadows are gathering grew powerful as darkness came. A rising excitement informed that presence,
as though the host of the unforgiven dead knew that some change had taken place, even though they could not come out and scout around in the daytime. The skies remained clear over Katovar. The moon rose just before sunset, so there was ample silvery light to reveal the opening stage of the shadow invasion. A trickle of small explorers gradually slithered through the shattered boundary. The scream of a dying pig reached us. More shadows descended the slope. Though they did not appear to be communicating with one another, somehow more and more and bigger shadows became aware of the opportunity. "Look there," Lady said. A line of Varoshk flyers had begun passing near the moon. Before long, little balls of light were bubbling into existence within the dense vegetation down the slope.
"Maybe something like our fireballs."
The fireballs had been created originally to destroy the floods of darkness the Shadow Masters insisted on throwing against us.
"They're going to put up a fight anyway. Will you look at that?"
That being the Neph. "The Dreamwalkers are going out. I wonder why."
"Too bad we couldn't let the shadows all get out, then slam the gate shut behind them."
Even Shivetya would agree, I supposed. He was not pleased with some of the improvements made on his plane during recent millennia. Lady said,
"We should get moving, and you might want to put some thought into what to do with our new children once we get to the other end and they become tempted to run away."
"Yes, I should. We did not need any more psychotic sorcerers getting underfoot." Chapter 34 The Shadowlands Tobo's Chores. Tobo finished interviewing the black raven that was not really a bird, sent it racing back to Croker. He found his mother and Sleepy with Sleepy's usual fellow travelers studying a map of the territories north of the Danda Presh. They were trying to determine the most favorable route northward once the force finished crossing the mountains. Little colored patches represented the last known positions of the Protector and of Narayan Singh. Sleepy asked,
"News from Croker?"
"He's finished it. He's on his way. But it turned stranger than he expected."
He relayed the full report. Sleepy told him,
"You'll have to go back. We can't risk the chance of another gang of sorcerers getting loose over here."
"I suppose."
Tobo had no enthusiasm for that.
"I don't like it. Why didn't he just kill them after he had their flying things and that remarkable clothing?"
"Because he doesn't do things like that.
Not to mention the fact that dead people are not real cooperative when it comes time for them to share their knowledge."
"No. He lets people get away with stuff, then hunts them down 30 years later."
She made a growling noise.
"How can I keep moving if I don't have you here?"
"If Croker is on this side, all the unknown shadows will be on this side, too. The black hounds will be running out front in no time. A day or two later, we'll be able to see what's going on anywhere we want to look."
Sleepy needed that reassurance.
She was worried about everything going on out where she had no ability to see.
Reminding her that most people, including most captains, went through whole lives far more blind than she had ever been, did nothing to improve her temper. Sleepy was spoiled. Throughout her association with the company, one way or another, we had owned some ability to find out what was happening far away from us. You let anybody have something for a little while, they soon consider it their birthright. Sleepy was very much no exception to that rule. Goblin crabbed.
"I understand that you need Tobo here before you can let the prisoners leave the plane. But why shouldn't the rest of us go ahead? We aren't getting anything useful done just sitting here."
"You're getting done what I want you to get done. Now be quiet before I gag you." I became impatient myself before Tobo finally appeared. He was subject to the constraints of normal travel. We had no flying carpets anymore, though there was hope that the Howler might create some once he was reawakened. Nobody had yet tried. And now there was the possibility we might gain the secrets of the Varoshk flying posts. Tobo came in astride the superhorse that had attached itself to Sleepy. Bred originally to serve the Lady of the Tower up north, a number had come south with the company.
This was the last known survivor. "How long do those things live, hun?" I asked Lady as Tobo approached.
"Maybe 40 years, at the extreme. This one is pushing the limit."
"Looks pretty spry. Despite having run 40 miles, the animal looked almost fresh."
"I did good work in those days."
"And you miss them now?"
"Yes."
She would not lie to me. She did not love me any less for missing being what once she had been, either. Near as I can tell, she never regrets anything she does, good or evil. I wish I could be that way. Tobo dismounted right outside the Shadow Gate. I passed him through. He got straight to business, though he smiled and waved to his father and uncle and Doge.
"You have 5 prisoners, all major wizards."
"I don't know about that. They could be complete no-talents, far as I can tell. But they did go flying around on fence posts, wearing a kind of super fabric that Goblin says can be manipulated by thoughts. This comes across as a you'd better be careful, Croaker, kind of sign."
"We can communicate with them."
"We have 2 brothers whose father studied and managed Bowalk while she was in Katovar. The father could force Bowalk to resume human shape for an hour or two sometimes, but he couldn't keep her there. He thought the problem was a dead man loop shapeshifter built into the shape-changing spells. Shifter didn't trust her. The loop activated when One Eye killed him. Anyway, this Varoshk's kids picked up some of Bowalk's native tongue from being around her, which has been for all of their lives. When the Varoshk blew up the Shadow Gate, one of them got the bright idea that he could talk us into taking them to safety somewhere else. He rounded up some friends who were just as scared and came to us. He assumed we all spoke the same language as the Forvalaka. He had some strange notion that we would recognize the innate superiority of the Varoshk and take his bunch in as honored guests. He couldn't imagine it being any other way, because that's the only way it could be in Katovar. He's vain, stupid, and arrogant. They all seem to be. The other brother more so. He won't even talk. Tobo smiled a little unpleasantly, perhaps recalling similar attitudes amongst Sien's warlords.
"I expect they've all suffered one disappointment after another."
"Abso-damn-lutely. Life has become an unimaginable hell for these kids. I have to remind them over and over that they're still alive."
"Let's go meet them, shall we?"
The kid looked like he was excited by the challenge. As we approached the refugees, I warned Tobo. "They're all gorgeous, but I really don't think they have a brain between them. At least they show every sign of being slow learners." We stopped several yards from Katovar's forlorn children. They huddled together beside the road as Black Company men and mules began to move out through the Shadow Gate. Only one of the girls had ambition enough to look up. The little one. The one we had taken prisoner. She stared at Tobo for half a minute. Then she murmured something to her companions. They looked up too. Only the ringleader and his brother betrayed their native arrogance. And it had not been that long or arduous a journey. They seemed to sense something in Tobo that was not apparent to me. It awakened hope. Several babbled questions in their own language.
"When they stop yammering, tell them who I am. Don't feel like you have to be entirely honest, either."
"A little exaggeration couldn't hurt."
"Hardly ever."
The interview lasted longer than I anticipated. Tobo was remarkably patient for his age. He worked hard to make the Varoshk understand that they were no longer in the land of their fathers, that here it did not matter who they were or who their parents had been. In our world, they were going to have to sing for their supper. We broke for a snack. The Varoshk and their guards were the only people left on the plain side of the Shadow Gate. I told Tobo, "I admire your patience."
"Me too. Already I want to kick some of them. And it's not really all patience, anyway. I'm trying to learn more about them by reading what they don't say and what they do let slip."
"You're right. They don't seem very bright. Though I'm guessing that's as much because of the way they were educated as it is any natural stupidity.
They have no idea whatsoever of their own past. None.
never heard of the free companies. Never heard of the Lance of Passion. Didn't know that some really great wizards from Katavar erected the standing stones that are all over the plain, at great peril to themselves from shadows. Didn't even recognize the name Katavar, though they do know Kadi as some vague old-time demon that nobody cares about anymore. How do you know that? About the memorial stones? Baladitya got it from Shivetya. You did notice that the runes on the flying logs are almost identical to the ones on the standing stones. I didn't notice that, no. Mostly I've kept busy watching Goblin. The little shit speaks a bit of the language. He's been sneaking around talking to them. Tobo chewed and nodded and looked thoughtful. You ask him about it? Hardly. I don't trust that guy, Tobo. One Eye told me not to just before he passed. Nobody is going to trust Goblin for a long time, Croker, and he knows that as well as anybody else does. He'll be the carefulest goblin you ever saw. You won't even recognize him. We're talking about Goblin here. He can't help himself. He got into most of what he got into because One Eye dragged him along. Think about it, Croker. If he somehow turned into Kina's tool, his assignment will be a long-term one. Bring on the Year of the Skulls kind of stuff. He won't get himself killed trying something trivial. I grunted. That made perfect sense on a rational level, but I remained unconvinced. Goblin was Goblin. I had known him for a long time. The things he did not always make sense, even to him. I asked, "What'll we do with the Voroshk?" "I'm going to educate them." Damn, I did not like the way he said that. He replaced my guards with his own cronies, Taglians led by a senior sergeant called River Walker. All these guards were fluent in the language of Xian and possessed a working knowledge of Nguyen Bao, which was a close cousin of the language spoken in the Land of Unknown Shadows. Tobo instructed the guards, then the prisoners, through me, explaining the facts of life. "These men will be your teachers. They will teach you languages and the skills you will need to get along in this world. They will expose you to our religions and laws and the ways we have for getting along with one another." The boy doing the translating started to protest. River Walker smacked him in the back of the head hard enough to knock him down. Tobo continued, "You have to understand that you're guests. You bought passage out of Katavar with your knowledge. Your lives will be as comfortable as we can make them, so long as you cooperate. But we are at war with ancient and powerful enemies. We won't be inclined toward patience with anyone who doesn't cooperate. Our patience will be especially short with people we consider dangerous. Do you understand?" Tobo waited for me to finish translating. I asked an extra time to make sure the kids really grasped the gravity of the situation. Youngsters have a hard time getting it when the cruel and deadly applies to them personally. They also tend to agree to almost anything just to stop hearing about it. Tobo had me tell them, "The rest of today and tonight you can rest. Tomorrow you'll begin an intensive education in Taglian, while we're hurrying to catch up with the rest of our army. I'll travel with you and will help you as much as I can." The leader boy wanted to argue again. He had not listened closely enough to what he was translating. River Walker knocked him down again. Tobo told me, "That one's going to be trouble." "There's a good chance they all will be. They couldn't get along at home. They had to be misfits." Shifting languages, I told the kids, "If you make yourselves more trouble than you're worth, these people will kill you. Come on. I think I see some chow waiting to make our acquaintance." One of the girls said something in her own language, the captive, not the one who had come along with the boys. I responded to the whine, "Tell her she can't go home. It's too late for that." Meantime, Tobo remarked, "But everybody here is running away from something." "Some," I stipulated. "How soon do you think we'll get a chance to sit down somewhere? I've got a lot of writing to catch up on." Tobo laughed. "You'd better stage a coup, you want a chance to sit down. Sleepy won't take time off until the corpses are piled high enough to make fences. The Varoshk seemed to enjoy their evening meal. They were hungry enough to appreciate anything. We started teaching them Taglian nouns. Tobo studied both them and the wonders they had brought with them. He seemed less impressed by their flying posts than he was by the clothing they were no longer permitted to wear. He told me, "Those posts look like a variation on the same sorcery Howler uses to operate his flying carpets. I should be able to work it out eventually. If I can get around some spells that are meant to make the posts destroy themselves if they fall into the wrong hands." I told him about the two I had seen explode. "Pretty potent self-destruct, then. I'll be careful. Be careful of those girls, too. I think the little ones already staked you out." Come morning, the leader kid could not be wakened. He was alive, all right, but no one could rouse him. "What did you do?" I asked Tobo, whispering, having leapt to a conclusion involving Tobo wanting the potential troublemaker out of the way, without us losing access to his post and clothing. "I had nothing to do with it." Lady examined the boy after I did. She said, "This looks a lot like the coma Smoke went into for so long." I agreed, but Soulcatcher had been responsible for that, we believed, and there was no way this could be her doing. The unknown shadows knew every move she made, and would turn aside any monsters she sent against us. I wondered aloud, "Were any of your invisible friends around here last night? Maybe they saw something." "I'll check." By dint of ferocity, I got the unconscious kid's brother to admit that he could communicate. I made him understand that they needed to bind his brother onto one of their posts. Otherwise, he would get left behind when we moved out. The kids were terrified. "Handy disaster," Lady remarked. "Yeah, but for whom?" Chapter 35 Taglios The Message. Mugaba swore softly, but virulently, foully, and steadily. Crows had been arriving for over an hour, each bird carrying a fragment of a long message from the Protector. Being bird-brained, no one crow could carry much of the whole, and because they were vulnerable to a thousand misfortunes, every fragment had to be sent again and again. The great general hated putting these puzzles together, and this one was the worst ever by an order of magnitude. There should not be this many crows in the whole world. He had 20 scribes working on the message already. Some points became clear quickly. He sent for Aridatha Singh and Gopal Singh. This message would affect all of them. By the time the others arrived, enough of the puzzle had come clear for Mugaba to reveal what, for him, was the most critical detail. "They're back." Aridatha jumped, startled by Mugaba's intensity.
"Back? Who's back?" Black Company. The Protector destroyed them, right? Root and branch, right? But now she says they're back. They're patching her message together in the next room right now." Gopal asked,
"What are you talking about?"
"There's a huge message coming in from our employer. She's given up her quest. She's on the run, headed home. The Black Company is pouring through the Shadow Gate. Thousands strong, well-armed, well-clad, well-trained. With the Radishadra and Prabhrindradra in their train, and blessing them. And we have nothing much in their way for hundreds of miles. She's headed back here. She expects to lose her ability to watch them shortly. They have some unfamiliar kind of supernatural help coming off the plane with them. Evidently something like the shadows, but more dangerous because they're smarter." Aridatha observed,
"Sounds like pretty good intelligence gathering for somebody who's on the run from an enemy who knows her capabilities."
Singh's handsome face had lost some of its color. His voice had gone husky.
"A thought which did not escape me. She is Soulcatcher, after all. On the other hand, though, she can't learn anything when there isn't anything to see.
Haridatha and Gopal nodded. In all ways, except in their hearts, they remained dedicated servants of the Protector. Mogaba said,
"The enemy, being familiar with the Protector's capabilities, means they'll try to take them away from her. We don't know who's in charge, but doctrine is doctrine. They'll try to blind her first, then they'll try to take away her capacity to communicate. They couldn't have come at a better time for them. She's 100 miles from nowhere. She can't spread the word much faster than rumors will spread. And you know the news that the Radisha and her brother are coming back will spread like the plague."
Gopal said, "I'll seal this part of the palace off then. We don't want those people in there running to their temples or whatever, and telling too much of the truth to someone who use it as a tool against us."
"Do that. It would look good to the Protector's invisible spies. But on the other hand, it might be very useful to have some of the news get out. Taglios might fall into a state of chaos, a state in which there would be opportunities. Chaos could be very useful. Chaos could make wonderful camouflage. Perhaps when the Protector was nearer Taglios. Right now it was necessary to prepare for the advent of the company. That would be expected from all quarters. Where did they find so many men? Or shadows of their own? What other surprise cards did they have in their hand? Some, surely. That was their nature." Mogaba said,
"We've got to leak some of the news, like it or not. We have to get ready for war. We're headed for a fight, unless we give up without a struggle. I don't plan to do that myself. I couldn't live with the consequences."
The Singhs exchanged glances, the great general showing a sense of humor. Remarkable. Gopal said,
"People are afraid of the Black Company."
"Of course they are. But when was the last time they won? We beat them over and over during the Kialune Wars."
Mogaba was proud of his work back then. His thinking and planning had contributed to every Taglian triumph.
"But we didn't wipe them all the way out. The trouble with the Black Company is that you leave even one of them alive, before long they're coming right back at you again."
"My brother unforgiven." That slogan haunted Mogaba's nightmares. He had his regrets.
"How soon can we expect the Protector?" Gopal asked. "I'll have preparations to make."
Mogaba said, "She was on foot when she started sending her message. But she'll get to a courier station eventually. Then she'll start making good time. I wouldn't count on having more than another 2 or 3 days if she gets in a real hurry."
Gopal grunted unhappily. Mogaba nodded. Nothing ever went easily. Haridatha asked,
"Did she catch the deceivers?"
Once again Mogaba thought the man betrayed a curiously skewed interest, possibly a personal interest.
"No, I told you, she said she was breaking off the chase."
"Enough. We all pretty much know what we need to do. Haridatha, I want the entire courier battalion here as soon as possible. The garrison commanders will need to be advised. I'll let you know right away if any critical news comes in." Watching the message continue to approach final form, the great general reviewed his unit commanders and the readiness and reliability of their commands. He was troubled. At first glance, it would seem he could call up the resources of an empire. But the Protector had not concerned herself with the upkeep of her armed forces when she was not directly and immediately threatened. And she was not remotely popular, never had been, and never wanted to be. She preferred rule by raw strength. The Prabhrindra Dra and his sister returning was particularly troubling. They had been popular in their era, and in time's crucible had gone through the first stages of sanctification already. Some would hail them as liberators. Hell, if Croker was still alive, they might give him his old title back. There would be desertions, both at high levels and among the soldiers. Mogaba was more concerned about the troops. The nobility and senior priests, who owed their positions to the Protector, would play it carefully.
Taglios had received several painful lessons regarding the price to be paid for betraying the Protector. Where would it be best to bring the company to battle? And how could he force battle upon them if they were reluctant to hazard a major encounter? He was sure that his best chance lay in forcing an early confrontation, before what forces he did have began to evaporate. Chapter 36. The Nether Taglian Territories. The Barrens. Soulcatcher hastened along the bank of a creek that was almost as still and deep as a canal, looking for a way to cross. She had miscalculated when she had chosen to cut across these moors and downs to reach the shabby stronghold at Nija. Clinging to the road would have meant a longer walk, but there would have been bridges for times like these. When she encountered obstacles of this sort, she had no choice but to guess which way to turn. She did not know the country. She was blind. There were no bats or owls to send scouting. There were no shadows tonight. She had sent all those to safety, along with her crows. She knew she was capable of dealing with the hobgoblins following her around. Something rose from the water behind her. It had a shape like a horse. A voice whispered in her ear, telling her to come and ride. She barely glanced at it, and then only in total scorn. These things might be smarter than shadows, but they could not be by much. How stupid did they think she was? She did not have to be familiar with the folklore of Sien to understand that the water horse would drag her under. She ignored the monster, not knowing it was an Avanc, actually of centaur shape rather than equine. A half hour later, she ignored one of its cousins, which took the semblance of a giant beaver. Then there was one resembling a crocodile, though this creek was 400 miles from anywhere warm enough to support those giant reptiles. They all whispered to her. Some of them even knew her true name. She found a plank footbridge evidently put in place by the seldom-seen, horse-stealing natives of these highlands. As she started across, something whispered to her from underneath. She did not understand its words, but their menace was plain enough.
"You don't want me crossing? Come up and do something about it."
The voice she chose was that of a small child who was severely annoyed, but not frightened. Something came up. It was huge and dark and ugly. In spots it glowed with a leprous inner light. It had way too many teeth. They stuck out of its mouth at all angles. It would have trouble when it came time to eat. All those teeth and fangs snapped open as the monster prepared to lunge. Soulcatcher's gloved right hand drifted forward. A spray of sparkling dust floated onward to meet the evil spirit. It screamed. Soulcatcher leapt off the bridge an instant before it shattered to kindling. She backed away, watched the fiend thrash and melt. From behind her mask came a soft wee sound, like a little girl's skip-rope song, with a refrain that went, "It was fun to watch you die." Chapter 37. The Taglian Territories. Somewhere north of Charandaprash. The Daughter of Night actually seemed to be thriving now that the Protector was stalking them no longer. Narayan was worried.
"You're always worried," she chided.
She was happy. Her voice was musical. The light of the campfire made her eyes sparkle, when it did not make them glow red.
"If someone is after us, you worry about getting caught. If we're safe, you worry about me not being a perfect replica of this image of the Daughter of Night you've invented inside your head. Narayan. Narayan. Papa Narayan, what I want more than anything is somehow to fix it so you don't have to do this anymore. You've been the one for so long. You deserve to put it all down now and relax."
Narayan knew that was not possible. Never would be. He did not argue, though.
"Then let's bring on the Year of the Skulls. Once Kina returns, we can loaf for the rest of our lives."
The girl shivered, seemed puzzled. Then she shuddered violently. She grew more pale, leaving Narayan wondering how she managed that when she was always as pale as death to begin. She stared out into the night, obviously troubled. Narayan started to dump dirt, piled there for that purpose, onto the fire. The girl said, "It's too late." A huge shape rose behind her, then faded away as though dispersed by the wind.
"Kid's right, old man,"
said a voice Singh had not heard for years and was hearing again far sooner than he had hoped. Iqbal and Runmust Singh, no relation to Narayan, appeared at the edge of the firelight, wavering as though they were a mist coalescing. Other men appeared behind them, soldiers in a style of armor Narayan had never seen. Amongst the soldiers he saw drooling, red-eyed beasts of species he had never seen before, either. Singh's heart redoubled its wild pounding. The girl observed,
"Now we know why my aunt quit chasing us."
Runmust Singh agreed.
"Now you know. The Black Company is back, and we're not happy."
Runmust was a great shaggy shadar whose sheer size was oppressive. Iqbal Singh smiled, perfect teeth glistening in the middle of his brushy beard.
"This time you'll have to deal with your mother and your father."
Iqbal was as shaggy and nearly as huge as his brother, but somehow less intimidating. The girl remembered him having a wife and several children, but did he mean her birth mother, her natural father? But they were supposed to be dead. Her knees went watery. She never had seen her natural parents. The living saint was unable to keep his feet. Kina was going to test him yet again, and he had no energy left to spend in the fight for his faith. He was too old and too feeble, and his faith had worn too thin. Runmust gestured. The soldiers closed in. They were careful men who made certain they did not get between their captives and the crossbows threatening them. They put the girl's hands into wool-stuffed sacks, then bound her wrists behind her. They gagged her gently, then pulled a loose woolen sack over her head. They were aware that she might work some witchery. Narayan they placed upon an extra horse, then tied him to the saddle. They were doing him no kindness. They were in a hurry. He would be too slow if they made him walk behind them. They were more gentle with the girl, but her immediate fate was identical. Their captors were not gratuitously cruel, but the girl was sure that would change when they found themselves with adequate leisure time. The strange young soldiers in the clacking black armor seemed highly intrigued by what they could see of her pale beauty. This was not the way she had imagined herself becoming a woman, and her imagination had been extremely active for several years.
Chapter 38. The Taglian Territories. The Danda Presh. We were high in the pass through the Danda Presh when the news arrived. The grinding weariness dragging my ancient bones down slipped my mind. I was at the head of the column. I stopped walking, moved aside, watched all the tired mules and men trudge past. Man and animal, we hoped the main force had not stripped Charandaprash of food and fodder. The Varoshk had sunk deep into exhaustion and despair. Tobo traveled with them, talking all the time, trying to teach them through their pain and apathy. The kids had not had to walk anywhere ever before. Their flying logs followed right behind. Lady finally came up. I joined her. I sensed that rumor had reached her already, even though nobody seemed to have any breath to waste on conversation. Rumor is magical, maybe even supernatural. I told her anyway. Runmust and Iqbal have captured Narayan and Bubu. They never stopped heading our way after Soulcatcher left off chasing them.
I heard.
You as nervous as I am?
Probably more.
We trudged along for a while, then she said,
I never got a chance to be a mother. I never got a chance to learn how. After Narayan kidnapped her, I just went back to being me.
I know. I know. We have to keep reminding ourselves not to get emotionally entangled in this. She isn't going to think of us as mom and dad.
I don't want her to hate us, and I know she will. Being the daughter of Night is her whole life. I thought about that. Eventually, I told her, being the Lady of Charm was your whole life once upon a time, but here you are. Here I am. Her lack of enthusiasm would have disheartened a lesser man than I. She and I were of an age now where we spent too much time wondering how things might have gone had we made a few different choices. I had plenty of regrets. I am sure she had more. She gave up so much more. Willow Swan went puffing past with some remark about old folks slowing everybody down. I asked, "You guys keeping an eye on Goblin? He don't fart without we don't know about it." That goes without saying. The whole countryside knows. He's not getting away with anything, Croker. I was not confident about that. Goblin was a slick little bastard. If I had the time, I would stay right beside him myself, step for step. Lady said, "Goblin hasn't done anything suspicious." I know, but he will. And that attitude is beginning to win him some sympathy. I thought you ought to know. I know, but I can't help recalling One-Eye's warning, either. You noted yourself that One-Eye would try to get his last lick in from beyond the grave. Yeah, yeah, I'll try to take it easier. We need to move a little faster. The rear guard was almost up to us. We could lag behind and sneak off into the rocks for a while. Maybe you're not as worn out as you thought, then. Get a move on. And after a moment, we'll talk about that tonight. Some motivation, then. Chapter 39 Taglios, the Great General. Thus far, Mogaba had contained the worst reaction to the seething rumor cauldron that Taglios had become. His most useful tool was the carefully placed half-truth. His representatives did not deny that something big and dangerous was going on down south. They did, however, suggest that it was an uprising by the same sort of Shadowlander troublemakers who had supported the Black Company during the Kialune Wars. They were milking that connection from the past, trying to intimidate opponents and encourage friends. There was no Black Company anymore. Rumor had not yet discovered the Prabhrindra Dra and his sister. Mogaba would offer the suggestion that those people were impostors when stories did begin to circulate. "This is actually going better than I expected," the great general told Aridatha Singh. "None of the garrison commanders have refused their marching orders. Only a handful of the senior priests and leading men have tried to pretend neutrality. I wonder if that state would persist if we lost the protector." Mogaba had been trying to find out for some time. The Prabhrindra Dra had yet to produce an heir. His only living relative was his sister, who had run Taglios and its dependencies for years in fact, if not in name. At one point she had proclaimed herself her brother's successor. Though the culture militated against a female ruler, she might be allowed to take over again if her brother preceded her in death. No one knew what would happen if brother and sister were both gone, as most of the population believed them to be. The question was entirely an intellectual exercise these days. Power in Taglios belonged to the protector almost exclusively. Mogaba never pressed his questions beyond a purely speculative level. None of his respondents suspected a deeper purpose, nor did anyone volunteer to participate in an effort to get rid of the protector, though it was no secret that most Taglians would prefer to do without Soul Catcher's protection. Communications with Soul Catcher had ceased. The Crow population had suffered a dramatic decimation, whether from disease or enemy action, remaining unclear. Their numbers had been dwindling for decades, until murders in the wild were almost unknown. Bats could not carry significant messages, owls would not, and there was no one at the Taglian and trained to manage and communicate with shadows. That was a rare talent indeed, and the Black Company had exterminated the Brotherhood who had shared it back when they were still running things their way. Soulcatcher had scoured the Shadowlands, whence those people had sprung, length and breadth.
She had turned up just a few old women and very young children who had survived all the wars and purges. They seemed to be a people unrelated to any other in the South, had been unknown there before the advent of the Shadow Masters, and among themselves had an oral tradition of having come from an entirely different world. Those old women and babies had lacked any useful knowledge or talent. When his duties granted the time, Mogaba walked the main route from the palace to the city's southern entrance. The walls had been under construction for decades and remained unfinished, but the southern gate complex, the most important, had been completed and put into use ages ago. By channeling traffic through its bottleneck, the state managed to tax all incoming travelers. He was looking for the perfect place to put an end to the Protectorate. 4 explorations had not revealed it yet. The obvious sites were just that. Obvious. Soulcatcher would be alert. She was intimate enough with human nature to realize that rumors fed by the crisis in the South would reawaken opposition to her rule. There seemed to be no way to manage it in the streets, and the longer it was delayed, the more certain she was to become suspicious of her captains. It would be impossible for them to conceal their nervousness. It would have to be instantly upon her arrival, or immediately upon her entering the palace, or never. They could forget the whole thing, go back to being her faithful hounds, and wait with her for the disaster from the south. When Mogaba thought of the company, he shuddered, and was most sorely tempted to abandon the plot against the Protector. Soulcatcher would be a potent weapon in that war. The gate. The South Gate. It had to happen there. The complex had been engineered for exactly that sort of thing, although on a larger scale. When he returned to the palace, he found Aridatha Singh waiting.
"There was a messenger, General. The Protector has reached Dejagare. She took time out to review the troops assembling there, though it would seem the enemy isn't that far behind."
Mogaba made a face. "We don't have much time left, then. She won't lag long behind our couriers." Unspoken but understood remained the fact that they were running out of time to choose their final commitment. Then Mogaba grunted. He had realized suddenly that the Protector could pluck the whole opportunity right out of their hands. Easy as snapping her fingers. Chapter 40. The Taglian Territories, below Lake Tanji. We overtook Sleepy in the hills beyond the north shore of Lake Tanji. Lady hurried ahead. She knew better, but could not help herself. Runmust Singh's rangers were still somewhere out ahead of the main force. They were close enough for their campfires to be seen across the barrier hills, but recent hard rains had flooded the ravines and creeks between here and there, which was the only reason we had caught Sleepy so soon. The flooding had slowed her down. "It won't be long," she told us, "unless we get more rain. These washes drain fast." I knew. I fought the Shadow Masters across these hills many years ago. My wife was exasperated. She turned on Tobo, who, with his father, was renewing acquaintances with Sara.
"When are you going to learn enough about those damned posts so we can use them?
A little flooding would slow nobody if we could fly." Tobo told Lady the truth, which was the last thing she wanted to hear.
"It might be months yet, maybe even years. If we're all so anxious to become more mobile, why don't we wake the Howler up and make a deal for some flying carpets?"
Debate was immediate and brisk, with almost everyone feeling a need to offer an opinion. Goblin, Doge, Lady, Tobo, Sara, Willow Swan, Mergen, Goblin again. Even Tydei looked like he had a viewpoint, though he kept it to himself. I realized that Sleepy had not stated her opinion. In fact, her eyes had glazed over. She was far, far away. Her intensity was disturbing. One by one, the others fell silent. A foreboding emotional murk began to gather. I looked for unknown shadows, but saw nothing. What was going on? Tobo spoke up first.
"Captain, what's the matter?
Sleepy had begun to lose color. I got up to go find my medical kit. Sleepy came out of it. Tobo. Her voice was so intense, silence spread in all directions. Did you remember to restore the Shadow Gate so it won't collapse if Long Shadow dies? The silence deepened. Suddenly we were holding our breaths, and staring at Tobo, and every one of us knowing the answer, even if we had not been there and did not want it to be true. Sleepy said, "They've had him in Sien for as long as we've been here. He was a frail old man. He won't last." Without saying a word, Tobo started getting ready to travel. Groaning, I clambered to my feet and began getting my stuff together, too. Tobo began telling his father and Uncle Doge how to manage the Voroshk.
"You have to keep them engaged. Keep them trying to learn. Keep them away from Goblin. You'll need to force-feed the sick one. I don't think he's going to last much longer."
I was not sure I overheard that last remark. He spoke very softly. He was right. The kid was slipping away. I could not stop it. I looked hard at Lady, who had shown no sign of getting ready to do what had to be done. I told her, "You need to come. Following Tobo, you're our best gate mechanic." I offered a hand. Mergen, I noted, was paying his son's instructions no attention. He was getting ready to travel, too. Lady's expression hardened. She accepted my hand. Upright, she stared northward. The fires in Runmust's camp were not visible now. Rain was falling between here and there. Several others, including Willow Swan, quietly began getting ready to travel, too. No names were named, no orders were given. Those who needed to go or thought their presence would be useful began packing. Nobody grumbled. Nobody said much of anything at all. We were all too tired to waste energy doing anything but what had to be done. No fingers got pointed, either. It took no genius to understand that Tobo had been swallowed up by his own workload, with people wanting something more from him every minute. Sleepy bore the heaviest responsibility. It was her job to see that everything got done. She should have had a checklist. But she had been single-minded in her desire to move faster than resistance could coagulate in front of her. For that, she could not be faulted. The company had seen no fighting yet, though nearly a quarter of the Taglian Empire could be accounted disarmed. It was the most remote and lightly populated quarter, but the strategy remained sound. The wealth Sleepy had brought off the plane would let her exploit the territories we held far more effectively than would Soul Catcher's capacity for generating terror allow her to exploit what she held. Of course, if the Shadow Gate collapsed, all that would be moot. Our world would be in greater danger than Katovar. Unlike the Voroshk, we could not defend ourselves. Tobo did not bother collecting the few bamboo fireball throwers left. If we became desperate enough to need them, that handful would not do any good. There were eight of us. Tobo and his father, me, Lady, Willow Swan, and Ty Day, because Mergen never got out of rock-throwing range of Tobo's uncle. Then there were two older-than-average hard cases from Sien, solid veterans of the warlord conflicts. One we knew as Panda Man, because his real name sounded like that. The other was Spook. He was Spook because he had green eyes. In Sien, demons and haunts are supposed to have green eyes. The unknown shadows refused to conform. Every one of those haunts that I have actually seen had the more traditional red or yellow eyes. Many of the unknown shadows traveled with us. At night, under the moon when it made its infrequent, shy appearances, the ground surrounding us seemed to be a sea in motion. Tobo's pets did not mind being seen just now. Before long, my two ravens rejoined me. I had seen nothing of them since shortly after we had left the Shadow Gate. Tobo told me, "I've sent scouts ahead. Now I'm going to ride ahead, too." He was mounted on Sleepy's super horse. "The rest of you follow me as fast as you can." He surged ahead.
Most of the churning darkness went with him, though we retained enough shadowy outriders that no danger would take us by surprise. "I'm sorry," I told Lady. "Not your fault this time." She was not happy, though. "You gotten anything out of Kina yet?" "No, nothing but a few infrequent touches while we were up there with Sleepy. They were pretty faint, and probably just because we were close to Boo Boo."
"Damn. You think we can get back to the gate in time?"
"You think Long Shadow will fight for life if he knows that the only thing he can accomplish is to save the people who pulled him down and turned him over to his oldest enemies?"
That was not the answer I wanted to hear.
Chapter 41. The Nether Taglian Territories. Leaves of Misfortune. Runmust and Iqbal rode northward slowly, at a pace their whole band found comfortable. Life would not be too hard until the captain caught up. She would be put out because the rangers did not meet her as soon as possible. She would get over it. The prisoners were given no opportunity to enjoy life, but they were not tormented directly. The Sings would not have allowed that, even had they known that Sleepy would not mind. There was no formal arrangement between the Sings and the dark spirits out of Sien, but unknown shadows paced them always. Communications remained crude. Runmust generally just got a really bad feeling when it was time to watch out. The problem was his, a religious failing. He was allowed no congress with demons. His innate human knack for rationalization had not yet exonerated the unknown shadows from being spawn of darkness. Runmust began to have one of those bad feelings. It grew worse fast. Iqbal's uneasiness said that he had been touched, too. Even some of the soldiers were becoming troubled. Quick hand gestures. The ranger team halted. Everyone dismounted. Scouts crept forward while the men assigned the duty for the day began moving the prisoners and horses into a gulch off the road. The warriors of Sien could be remarkably quiet and patient. Runmust admired their skill in using the available cover in terrain, boasting only tangled, scrubby brush, rocks, and lots of gullies. He could not do what they did. Of course, he was twice the size of the biggest and a decade older than the oldest. Min Bu, one of the best, intercepted him in his slow advance, after signing for absolute silence. Min brushed leaves aside and smoothed a patch of dirt. He used a forefinger to sketch the ground ahead, indicating the approximate positions of a well-chosen ambush site. Runmust singled a general withdrawal. He looked for crows or other creatures traditionally associated with the enemy. He saw nothing.
"How could they know we were coming?" he asked when he was far enough back to whisper. "How many of them are there?"
Min shrugged.
"We are not going to get a head count. There are a lot more of them than there are of us. And as for how did they know, from that hilltop you can see all the country we crossed the last 2 days. They were probably just sent out to see if this is the route north the captain picks."
He pointed back south. The dust and sparkle of the main force were obvious.
"Why an ambush?"
"They can see there aren't many of us. It would look like a chance to take some prisoners."
Runmust scanned the slope. Could he turn the tables on those people? He wished he had developed a more intimate relationship with the unknown shadows.
"Iqbal, talk to me."
"We're outnumbered. We should back away. There's no reason to get in a fight. Or even make contact. We've got important prisoners to protect, so let's stay away and wait for the captain."
Iqbal was a married man. He did not favor major risks.
Even so, Iqbal was right. Withdrawal was the only course that was not crazy. Runmust asked,
"What would they do if we did stroll into their trap?"
He wished he could catch a couple of them. A few questions answered would tell a lot about enemy plans and what the other side thought was happening.
"They see Sleepy coming. They'll pull out pretty soon."
"Why do I keep getting more and more nervous?"
Runmust knew the unknown shadows wanted him to know something, and he just was not hearing it. In the hills ahead, horses began screaming. Men cursed. Several dozen arrows rose into the air, fell where the enemy evidently thought the rangers were hidden. None of the arrows came close. Muttering curses to himself, Runmust waved his men back again. They began slipping away. Wildly sped arrows fell all across the slope.
"Idiots," Runmust muttered. "Recon by fire."
The Protector's soldiers would charge any outcry, or any other obvious reaction. They were an opportunity to inflict disaster, just waiting to happen. A Taglian soldier sprang up not 10 feet from Runmust, barking in pain as he swatted his ass. Runmust froze, hoping the Taglian was too preoccupied to notice him, though now he heard other Taglians pushing through the dry brush and knew he could not sneak off fast enough to get away untouched. Iqbal carried a fireball launcher. He was supposed to use it as an emergency signal, not as a weapon. It was believed to contain just one charge. It was ancient. There was no guarantee it would work at all. Iqbal, unseen by the man who had now spied Runmust, rotated the hand-grip trigger on that piece of bamboo. An intense yellow ball slammed right through the Protector's man and rattled around in the brush behind him. In seconds, a dozen fires were burning. Runmust and Iqbal ran. No point doing anything else now. They had almost reached the gully hiding the animals and prisoners when a random arrow found the unprotected meat of Runmust's right thigh. Singh flung forward in an uncontrolled dive. His beard protected his face as he plowed through the brush, but he left large tufts behind. He squealed with the unexpected pain. Iqbal stopped to help.
"Get out of here," Runmust growled. "You have Suruvija and the children,"
which moved Iqbal not at all. The Taglian troops blundered down the hillside, scattered in no order, without discipline or thought. Officers, sergeants, and men, they had no practical experience and very little training. They had come out of the Nija fortress because Soulcatcher had told them they might achieve a startling triumph. But once the situation on the ground deviated from their expectations, they were lost. Stumbling, dragging the leg with the arrow still embedded, Runmust clung to and leaned on Iqbal. Both men heard the exultant Taglian soldiers plunging through the brush behind them, swiftly bringing the inevitable. The rangers were men chosen from those who had seen prior action serving the warlords in Xian, and who both understood company doctrine and accepted it. They set an ambush of their own. The Taglians came to it as though guided by maleficent demons. The result was a bloodbath. It was a tactical triumph for the Black Company. It was not unalloyed by bad news. In the end, in the heat of the moment, the Rangers did fail to acknowledge doctrine. They did not fade away while the Taglians were confused and panicky. They maintained contact in hopes of making sure Runmust and Iqbal escaped. The Singh brothers did survive, but when the light cavalry flung forward by Sleepy right after she recognized the fireball signal arrived, they found most of the rangers wounded or dead after having been overrun. The horsemen pursued the fleeing Taglians. They cut down most of the enemy wounded and stragglers. Sadly, they failed to recapture the Daughter of Night. A particularly bright Taglian officer had recognized what he had stumbled across and got the girl moving to the rear immediately. Her grub-colored skin had given her away. When that day's sun set, it was a toss-up which side would consider the encounter the greater disaster. The company had lost a huge treasure and some of its most valuable men, at least for a while. The Taglians had endured a huge massacre with only one sullen, if exotically beautiful, pale, dirty young woman to show for all the deaths.
Chapter 42. The Nether Taglian Territories. After Battle. The captain herself reached the scene of the fighting just an hour after its end. She stomped around. She nagged the survivors with questions. Most of the rangers had survived, but only two had managed without suffering serious wounds. Sleepy interrogated prisoners even more emphatically. The cavalrymen had retained sense enough to capture a few Taglians who offered to surrender, presuming they would continue to cooperate to save their skins. None of the prisoners knew anything about the Daughter of Night. None even knew that name. The captain's prowling took her near Narayan Singh. She kicked the old cripple. Hellspawn. She turned, bellowed.
Why didn't we know about this ambush ahead of time?
Some bold soul told her the truth.
The unknown shadows probably did know, but nobody asked them. Tobo is the only one who knows how to talk to them the way it takes to get them to do the kind of spying you want.
Sleepy growled. She kicked Narayan Singh again. She paced.
What do we know about this fort?
Blade came forward. He would save the others. Sleepy's wrath fell less heavily upon him. Usually. Some thought she was a little afraid of Blade. In fact, she was just not sure of him, though he had been around longer than she had. Like Swan and Sara, he was not actually a sworn brother of the company, but he was always there and always involved. Blade said,
"The old captain established it. It was a remount station for the first courier post. The wall got added because the natives kept trying to steal the horses. Soulcatcher eventually expanded the fort and garrison during the Kialune Wars, because she wanted a stronger presence here, in case her enemies tried to sneak north this way. Assuming she did here the way she did everywhere else, she forgot the place as soon as the fighting was over. The garrison might be 150 or 200, plus hangers-on."
"Pretty big gang for out here."
"It's a big territory, and half of them are out of business now."
"What are the fortifications like?"
"I've never been there. I hear they're barely good enough to stop horse thieves, which means not real impressive. Some kind of rock wall, since that's the available material around here. I've heard there's a ditch that was never completed. Didn't you come this way when you ran south? Didn't you see it?"
"We took a trail west of here, the old trade road. We avoided the courier routes."
"You might send some cavalry to surround the place before they can move the girl out."
Sleepy mused.
"It's probably too late to stop them yelling for help."
Blade said,
"I don't think you need to worry about sneaking. By now, Soulcatcher's got the whole Taglian Empire alerted."
Sleepy grunted. Then she sent for cavalry officers. And after she sent them off, she visited Runmust and Iqbal. Those two had been close friends for 2 decades. She asked Iqbal's wife, Suruvija,
"What did the surgeon say?"
"They'll recover. They're Shaddaa. They're strong men. They fought well. God will watch over them."
Sleepy glanced at Sara, who was helping tend the wounded. Sara nodded, meaning Suruvija was not just wishful thinking. "I'll include them in my prayers as well."
Sleepy squeezed Suruvija's shoulder reassuringly, thinking the woman was too perfect to be real. At least as men saw wives. But she was Shaddaa too, and she believed, and the roles of all members of the family were clearly defined by her religion. Sleepy took time to talk to Iqbal's children, too. They were bearing up bravely, as they would, for they were good Shaddaa, too, despite the strange lands and societies they had seen. When she was around Iqbal's children, Sleepy sometimes even vaguely regretted having abandoned the woman's role. But that never lasted more than a few seconds.
"Blade, pass the word. I want the whole gang up to this fort before sunset, if that's possible. Once they see some numbers, I'm sure they'll give up."
Blade told her,
"You know you have to stop before long. The animals need time to graze and recover, and we have a tail of stragglers that has to stretch all the way back to Charandaprash.
People got hurt or sick or just could not keep up. It irked Sleepy, but it was a fact of life. Her strength was down maybe 1,000 men already. That would worsen rapidly if she continued to drive hard.
When they get here, the most worn-out ones can take over as our garrison.
That was a tactic as old as soldiering. She would not admit it, but she needed a rest herself. She could not imagine when she would get one, though.
Chapter 43 The Taglian Shadowlands The Shadow Gate
"Seem like there's much point dragging my weary ass over there?" I asked Lady. There was just enough dawn light to show the vague outline of the slope leading up to the Shadow Gate, which was still miles and miles from where we had spent the night. This part of the journey was one of those where you spent the whole day trying not to look ahead, because every time you do, it seems you have not gotten 10 feet closer. Way to our left, a smoky haze concealed the new city and the lower half of ruined Overlook. A lot of unpleasant memories connected us with those places.
"What do you mean?"
My sweetheart was as tired and morning cranky as I was, and her bones were a lot older than mine.
"Well, we didn't get killed last night. That means the gate hasn't collapsed yet. Old Long Shadow's still holding out."
"Evidently."
"Wouldn't that mean Tobo's got everything under control? So why beat ourselves up getting on over there?"
Lady smirked at me. She did not have to tell me. We would cross the valley because, in the end, I would want to see everything for myself, because I would want to get it all into the annals right. She had chided me 50 times during the ride south because I was trying to work out a way to write on horseback. I could get so much more done if I could do it while we were traveling. Then she chirped, "You are getting old."
"What?"
"A sign of advancing age. You start obsessing about how much you have to get done in the time that you have left." I made noises in the back of my throat, but did not argue. That kind of thinking was familiar. So was being unable to fall asleep because I was tracking my heartbeat, trying to tell if something was wrong. You would think a guy in my line of work would make his peace with death at an early age. We ran into several locals while crossing the valley, the bottom land of which was decent farmland and pasture. We did not receive one friendly greeting. I did not see one welcoming smile. Nobody raised a hand in defiance, but I had no trouble feeling the abiding resentment of a tormented nation. There had been no serious fighting in these parts for years, but the adult population were all survivors of the terrible times, whether they were natives or immigrants who had come in to settle the depopulated lands and to escape even worse horrors elsewhere. They did not want the evils of the past to return. This land had suffered grotesquely under the Shadow Master Long Shadow. It had continued to suffer after his defeat. The Kialune Wars devoured most everything that Long Shadow and the Shadow Master Wars had not. And now the Black Company had returned, out of the place of glittering stone, an abode of devils. The season of despair appeared to be threatening again.
"Can't say I blame them," I told Lady.
"What?" I explained.
"Oh," indifferently. "Some attitudes never wither."
She had been a powerful lord a lot longer than she had been just another tick on the underbelly of the world. Compassion is not one of the qualities that endeared her to me. We found Tobo impatient with our dawdling.
"I see the old gal's still here," I said of the Shadow Gate.
Lady and I produced our keys and let the crew cross over. Mergen first, so he could make sure his boy still had all his arms and legs and fingers and toes.
"It is," the Wonder Child confessed, "but probably only because Long Shadow still hasn't left the plane."
"What?"
Lady was irritated. "We made promises. We owe the children of the dead."
"We do," Tobo said, "but we won't be allowed to kill ourselves. Shivetya knew we forgot to disarm Long Shadow's booby trap, so he kept Long Shadow from leaving."
"How do you know that?"
"I sent messengers. That was the news they brought back."
Lady's mood had not improved.
"The file of 9 will be smoking. We don't need them as enemies. We may have to flee to the land of unknown shadows again."
"Shivetya will release Long Shadow the second we finish refurbishing our gate."
My companions were nervous.
Willow Swan was pale, sweating, dancing with anxiety, and, most of all, un-swan-like, silent. He had not, in fact, spoken all day. Thinking about the shadows can do that to you if you have witnessed one of their attacks. Tobo asked, "You two ready to go to work?" I shook my head. "Are you kidding?" Lady said, "No." Tobo told us, "I can't finish this alone." I replied, "And you can't finish it with assistants so tired they're guaranteed to make mistakes. I have a premonition. Long Shadow will keep till tomorrow." Tobo admitted that he would. Shivetya would see to it, but he did so with poor grace. Lady said, "Let's go set up camp." Mergen, Swan, and the others probably should have been doing that instead of standing around being anxious. Once we crossed the barrier, Lady wondered, "Why is Tobo in such a hurry?" I snickered, "I think it might have to do with Boo Boo. He hasn't seen her for a long time. Sleepy says he was completely smitten." While I spoke, her expression transformed from curious to completely appalled. "I'd hope not," Mergen suggested. "There were two rather attractive Voroshk girls. One of them might have something to do with it." Chapter 44 The Shadowlands Gate Repairs. The Dreamwalkers came during the night. Their presence was so powerful that even Swan, Pandaman, and Spook saw them. I heard them speak clearly, although I never understood a word. Lady and Tobo did get something out of them. They put their heads together over breakfast. They decided that the Neff wanted to warn us about something. "You think so?" I sneered. "There's a new interpretation." "Hey," Tobo chided me, "it has something to do with Katavar." "Like what, for example?" The youth shrugged. "Your guess is better than mine. I've never been there."
Last time we saw the Dreamwalkers, they were headed out into Katavar in the middle of all the shadows on the plain. "You think they saw something they think we ought to know?"
"Absolutely. Any idea what?"
Lady asked, "Have you had your unknown shadow friends try to talk to the Neff?"
"I have. It doesn't work. The Neff don't communicate with the plain shadows either."
"Then what was the unknown shadow's problem last night? The black hounds kept carrying on so bad they woke me up several times."
"Really?" Tobo was puzzled. "I never noticed."
"Nor did I. But I am deaf and blind to most supernatural stuff. Plus, for once, I had not been tossing around, listening for my heart to stop. Let's get to work."
"Boo Boo isn't going anywhere, kid."
Tobo frowned, then got it. He did not become embarrassed or defensive.
"Oh? Oh, you don't know. She's already gone. There was a fight with the garrison from Nija. Runmust's troop got overrun. The Taglians captured the Daughter of Night. Sleepy has cavalry trying to run them down now."
I shook my head and grumped. "It won't do her any good. A million horsemen won't be enough now."
"Aren't you pessimistic?"
"He's right," Lady opined. She lapsed into an old northern language I had not heard since I was young, and which I never had understood completely. She seemed to be reciting a song as a poem. It had a refrain that went something like, "Thus do the fates conspire." We were on the inside of the Shadow Gate, hard at it. Tobo was making tiny, elegant adjustments to the strands and layers of magic that made up the mystic portal. The training I had received had elevated me to the level of a semi-skilled bricklayer. Compared to me, Tobo was the sort of master artisan who created panoramic tapestries by weaving them instead of embroidering them. I was nothing but the lead finger man on the bow-tying team. Even Lady was little more than a hod carrier on this job, but hod carriers are needed too.
"Thanks for the compliment," Tobo said after I tried out my similes. "But I'm mostly doing embroidery and plain old-fashioned knot-tying on broken threads. Parts of this tapestry were plain outright crippled. It'll never be completely right,
even if it's stronger than when it started. But you can weasel Long Shadow's booby trap out of there. It's kind of like lancing a boil and cleaning it out, but yes, he actually made a pretty crude job of it. Obviously, he didn't know much about Shadow Gates. He did know that there was no one in our world who knew more. What he didn't understand was that there were more keys. Of course he knew, I said. That's why he sent Ashutosh Yaksha, his apprentice, to infiltrate the Nyuengbao priests at the Temple of Gangesha. Tobo looked puzzled, like he did not recall that story. He knew they had a key there, and he wanted it, so he could get back to Sien. If you don't know that story, you'd better corner your uncle, because that's what he told Sleepy. Tobo smiled weakly. Well, maybe, I suppose. What do you mean, you suppose? Lady paused what she was doing. Don't play Doge's games, Tobo. You won't be fooling anybody. I was there, inside the White Crow. I know what the man said. That's probably it. Doge told Sleepy a bunch of stories. Some were probably true, but some he probably made up. Stuff he thought might be true because it sounded plausible based on what he did know. Master Santaraxita spent years searching the records at Kangpi. The history of our world's Nyuengbao isn't much like what Doge might have wanted you to believe. Which was it? I mused aloud. Was he lying or making it up? I have known plenty of people who would not admit ignorance, even in the most obvious circumstance. Tobo said, Master Santaraxita says our ancestors left Sien as fugitives, sneaking out like snakes, using a secretly manufactured key. They were trying to get away from the Shadow Masters. There was supposed to be a regular, gradual evacuation across the plain. Because they were persecuted followers of Kadi, they did favor the organizational structure we've seen in other bands of believers. But those people weren't mercenaries, and they weren't missionaries. They weren't a free company. They weren't a band of stranglers. They were just running away because the Shadow Masters insisted they had to give up their religion. Master Santaraxita says their priests probably made up a more dramatic history after they'd been settled in the River Delta for a while. After several generations spent wandering. Before they arrived, the only people in the swamp were Taglian fugitives and criminals, and a few remote descendants of the deceivers Raedrinek tried to wipe out. Maybe the Nyuengbao wanted to impress them. Tobo's hands never stopped moving while he talked, but their movements had nothing to do with what he was saying. He was mending things that I could not see. How much did Doge lie? I was determined to pin that on him. I never did trust that old man. That's the intriguing part. I don't know. I don't think he really knows. He did tell me that a lot of what he told Sleepy originally he said just because it sounded believable and like something she wanted to hear. When you get right down to it, except for his skill with Ash Wand, Uncle Doge is a bigger fraud than most priests. Most priests actually believe what they preach. Lady said, Sounds like he's spent time hanging around with Blade. Tobo continued, The key my ancestors used to cross the plain was created secretly in Kangpi. It went back to Sien so the next group of fugitives could use it. They never got the chance. But they had the golden pick, which was the key that Sleepy eventually found and used to get onto the plain so she could release us captured from underneath Shivetya's fortress. That must have been the key that belonged to the deceivers who hid the Book of the Dead back in Raedrinek's time. They must have hidden the pickaxe under the Temple of Gangesha. The temple has a long history. It started out as a Janaka shrine. The Guni took over and used it as a retreat. Then the survivors of Raedrinek's pogrom chased the Guni out. But they faded away. Nyuengbao folklore talks about bitter fighting over doctrine in the early days. A century later, Guni holy men from the cult of Gangesha began to come back to the swamp. Eventually, most Nyuengbao forgot Kadi and adopted Gangesha. A few generations back, the pick turned up when the temple was being repaired. Somebody realized that it had to be an important relic. It wasn't till more recent times
when Long Shadow, and later Soulcatcher, found out about it, that anyone realized how important it had to be.
What about the pilgrimages?
Originally, people from Xian were supposed to meet our people at the Shadow Gate with news from home and more refugees. But the Shadow Masters found out. Plus, on this side, my ancestors lost touch with the past. Contrary to legend, and unlike the way things are now, there wasn't that much pressure from outside. Hanging on to old ways and old ideas wasn't that important a way to maintain the identity of the Nuengbao. Whatever Doge says, most Nuengbao aren't devoted to tradition and keeping the old ways. Most don't remember anything anymore. You saw that while we were in Xiang. The Nuengbao aren't anything like those people over there.
Lady and I exchanged looks.
Neither of us assumed Tobo was telling any more of the truth than Doge ever had, though the boy was not necessarily lying consciously. I glanced at Taidei. He gave nothing away. I said, "I've been wondering why Doge never found any path of the sword guys over there." "That's easy. The Shadow Masters wiped them out. They were the warrior caste. They kept fighting till there weren't any of them left." I had for years wondered why a sword-worshipping cult would be part of a people descended from a band of worshippers of Kina, who, in my world, did not believe in shedding blood. I still did not know, but now I knew that nobody else was likely to know either. I told Lady, "I'm surprised Sleepy never picked up on the fact that the supposed priest of this Nuengbao band went around carving people into stakes."
"Deceiver people at that," she added.
"He slaughtered them by the score at Charandaprash." Tobo is a clever young man. He understood that we did not find his version of history more convincing than Doge's. I still was not sure whether he believed what he was saying. It did not matter. Lady poked me. She whispered, "Mergen and Willow Swan have drawn my attention to an interesting phenomenon. You'll want to see for yourself. Tobo, drop doing what you're doing and look at this too." By then I knew it would be something I did not want to see. Taidei, Mergen, and the others were debating the best places to take cover already. I turned. Lady pointed. A trio of Voroshk flyers, appearing only slightly larger than dots, hovered above the rim of the plain. They were way up high and a long way away, motionless. I asked, "Anybody want to guess how well they can see us?" Lady said, "They can tell we're here, but that's it, unless they have a far-seeing device."
"What are they doing?"
"Scouting around, I imagine. Now that their gate is gone, they can get onto the plane whenever they want. During the day they're safe, as long as they stay off the ground, and they probably won't have much trouble with shadows even at night if they stay high up. We've never seen shadows go higher than 10 or 15 feet above the surface of the shielding."
"Think they're looking for us, or are they just looking?"
"Both, probably. They'll want revenge, and maybe even a safe new world." The Voroshk did not move while we were talking. I pictured similar trios ranging to all points of the plain, perhaps hoping they could open the way without us.
"Tobo, can they get off of the plane?"
"I don't know. They won't be able to here, not without one of my keys. I'll install something that'll kill them if they try."
I admired his confidence.
"Suppose they have somebody as slick as you are. What's to keep him from undoing your spells the way you're undoing Long Shadow's?"
"Lack of training. Lack of the knowledge we got out of Kang Pi. You have to know a little about these things to redo them."
Lady asked, "Can they break through the gateway into Xian?"
The knowledge was there.
"I don't know. They got the Forvalaka through. Maybe they could shove their own people through on a slow, one-at-a-time basis. They never tried before. But they've never been desperate before, and time isn't on their side."
"What about Shvetya? What's his take on this?"
"I'll find out. I'll send a messenger in just a minute."
One of the soldiers from Xian, Pandaman, I think, asked, "What about the men with Long Shadow? If he hasn't left the plane,
One is my cousin.
Tobo drew a long, deep breath.
My work is never done.
Lady said,
If you're going to do something, you'd better do it fast. They have a key. It's a risk.
Damn. You're right. Captain, I'm going to borrow your ravens. Lady, lean out the gate and yell for Big Ears and Catsif. They'll hear you. Tell them I want them. It's an emergency.
One damned thing after another, I grumbled. It never lets up.
But you're alive, Swan said.
Don't you be jumping around on the other side of your own argument.
We amused ourselves with some good-natured bickering while Tobo sent supernatural messengers off to Shivetya. The guards at the Sien Shadow Gate, Long Shadow's keepers, and our folks up north. Along the way, Mergen asked his son,
What's to keep those jokers up there from just flying off the plane? I remember times when crows came and went, and he used to do so himself all the time.
They could do that because they come from our world. Crows from any other world we wouldn't have seen at all, even if they were there.
Yes, the Varosh can fly out any time they want, but when they do, they'll end up in Katavar, every time. If they want to get off the plane into another world, they'll have to come onto it through their Shadow Gate and leave it through another Shadow Gate. Shivetya restructured it that way.
It can be confusing. I guess that happens where realities overlap, with a deathless demigod in the middle who feels compelled to make it hard for the human species to realize its darkest potential.
Chapter 45 Nija. The Stronghold Falls. There were fewer than 50 soldiers to hold Nija's walls, most of them injured already, and all of them thoroughly terrified after having endured a night overrun by the unknown shadows. The defenders were accorded the honors of war and allowed to march out without their weapons, taking their families and what possessions they could carry. They were admonished to clear the road whenever the Black Company passed. If the Nija stronghold had surrendered any faster, Sleepy would have worried that she was walking into a trap. As it was, she did send Doge in first to make sure Soulcatcher had left her no special little gifts. She had not.
Put Narayan somewhere where he can't embarrass me, Sleepy ordered after the stronghold had been declared secure. I'll decide what to do with him in a day or two. She would have preferred handing him over to Lady and Croker right away. Battalion, regiment, and brigade commanders and all senior staff are to assemble in the local headquarters building in 1 hour.
Sara asked,
You think there'll be room? I really thought this place would be bigger.
So did I, even though we knew it was a glorified remount station. Gosh, I wish Tobo was here instead of down there.
So do I.
Sara hated having her whole family so far away. She had become accustomed to having a real family again during our years in Sien.
I've been thinking, wouldn't it be reasonable to keep Tobo and Mergen from going to the same dangerous places?
Like the Shadow Gate?
Like that, or anywhere else where one bad blow could take them both away.
Sleepy understood Sara's agony. Sara had lost 2 children and 1 husband to malignant fortune already. The husband did not trouble her much. His removal had improved her life. But rare is the mother who will not ache forever over the loss of her little ones. All part of the wondrous, cruel experience of the Siege of Jaikur, or Dejagore, that has twisted so many members of the company and burdened them with vulnerabilities and obsessions that will shape their minds and souls for as long as they survive.
That's a good idea, Sleepy said, although you can count on getting resistance from the men. Can you imagine Runmust and Iqbal being willing to go anywhere where they're not elbow to elbow with each other?
Sara sighed. She shook her head slowly.
If the Guni are right about the Wheel of Life, then I must have been something more wicked than a Shadow Master in a previous life. This one never stops punishing me.
Let me tell you, it's harder being Vedna. You don't have other lives to blame it on. You just go crazy trying to figure out why God is so angry with you in this one.
Sara nodded. The moment had passed. She was in control again.
You'd think I would have made my peace with this life by now, wouldn't you?
Sleepy thought that she had, about as well as she could, but did not say so. She did not want to push Sara back onto the path of self-examination. That could get tiresome fast.
We have a major staff meeting. I want your help. I want you to think in broader terms. I'm rethinking my strategy. The distances are turning out to be too great for a headlong rush. We're getting weaker fast, while our enemies are getting stronger. I want your thoughts on different approaches.
I'll be all right. I have to have these spells once in a while, just to get by.
Chapter 46 Nija. The darkness always comes. Darkness came to Nija. With it came an almost supernatural silence. Within the crude walls, the senior commanders were clustered with Sleepy and Sara. Outside, the soldiers were cooking, repairing harnesses and equipment, or mainly just sleeping the sleep of the exhausted. A night's rest was never enough to recover fully from a hard day's march. Weariness accumulated, and more so when a force covered a lot of miles in a hurry. For the first time since his liberation, Goblin found himself unsupervised, overlooked, forgotten. He did not trust his observations for a while. These were sneaky people. Possibly they were testing him. Eventually it became evident that he really was running free, unmonitored. This was early in the game and way remote, but no better opportunity was ever likely to arise. Narayan stirred warily, though his despair was such that he could generate little concern about his own continued well-being. Already he had been separated farther, if not longer, from the Daughter of Night than ever before since her birth. If he lost her, there would be no reason to go on. It would be time to go home to Kina. There would be nothing more he could do, and there was little chance he would get any opportunity ever again anyway. He was alive now only because these people were saving him as a plaything for the girl's birth parents. Again. His days and hours were numbered, and once again his faith was being tested sorely. He heard a faint, breathy sound that seemed vaguely familiar. And it should be, he thought. His heart began to hammer. That was a deceiver recognition sign meant for use in darkness exactly like this, where the usual hand signals would not work. He murmured countersigns. The effort set off a coughing fit. The exchange continued until Narayan was satisfied that he had been located by a religious brother. He asked, "Why have you come? It won't be possible to rescue me." He used the secret deceiver cant, which amounted to the final test. It would at least advise him of the status of his visitor. Not many recent converts were yet that advanced in their studies.
"The goddess herself has sent me to relay her love and her esteem and her appreciation of all your sacrifices. She bid me to assure you that your rewards will be great. She wants you to understand that her resurrection is nearer than any non-believer suspects. She wants you to know that your efforts and your trials and your steadfast faith have made the difference. She wants you to know that her enemies soon will be overwhelmed and devoured. She wants you to know that she's watching over you and that you'll stand at her side when we celebrate the Year of the Skulls. She wants you to know that of all those who have ever served her, even of her many saints, you were her most favored."
Chapter 47 The Shadow Gate The Repairmen. The encampment below the Shadow Gate became the hub of a flood of unknown shadow traffic as Tobo tried to head off the Varoshk threat. He remained especially worried about Long Shadow's keepers till Shivetya somehow assured him that they were invisible to Varoshk eyes.
"Do you trust him?" Lady asked.
she being the most naturally paranoid of any of us at the Shadow Gate.
He might try to make a better deal with the Voroshk.
What better deal? We're going to give him what he wants, without trying to control him or even to get much out of him.
Bet he thinks we're too good to be true, then.
She was in a mood. I asked, what happened to the golden pickaxe, the deceiver key to the Shadow Gates? After a pause to make up his mind about what to admit, Tobo said,
I left it with Shivetya. We may need it again, when it's time to kill Kina. I couldn't think of any other place where it would be safer from her followers.
He was troubled as he looked the rest of us over. He was thinking he should have kept that to himself. The golden pickaxe was an extremely holy strangler relic that could also be used to help set Kina free. He was afraid that at least one of us was sure to tell somebody what we had just heard. It was a long night, followed by what promised to be a longer day. For the uninvolved members of the band, these were trying times. There was nothing for them to do but play cards and wonder if the people of the new city would be crazy enough to attack us. Panda Man and Spook mostly watched the game. They did not do well when they played. Tonk is one of the simplest games ever invented, rules-wise, but a huge part of it is the table talk that goes along with the actual picking up, discarding, and laying down of cards. A group accustomed to one another is an entirely different animal from one where the players barely speak the same language. Wherever the company stops for 15 minutes, a Tonk game soon develops. The tradition began ages before my time. It will persist long after I am gone. Gone. I tried to imagine what life might have been like had I left the company some time in the past. My imagination was not up to the task. I confess, I do not have the strength of personality to abandon everything I know, even when all that is just a meandering, unhappy path that too often wanders through the outlying marches of hell. I was a zombie most of the day, carrying that hod for my young bricklayer, while most of me was elsewhere, boldly adventuring across those fields of might-have-been. Sometime late in the afternoon, I told Lady, I probably should tell you this more often. I love you, and I'm glad fate conspired to bring our lives together. I stunned her into silence. I know Swan and Mergen gaped and spent some time trying to figure out if I thought I was dying. The Voroshk had not overlooked us. They were cautious. They showed themselves briefly several times during the day. Their customary arrogance seemed in abeyance. Once I left my own preoccupations behind, I asked Tobo, "What do you suppose they're up to?" We had talked about it before, but I am never entirely comfortable taking a sorcerer's motives at face value. "Looking for hope, or anything that will give them an edge. I expect that right now their world is more like hell than almost anything any priest ever imagined. Most of the surviving shadows from the plane must be running loose there. One family of sorcerers, however wonderful their weapons, just has no chance to stop what's happening. Not before the devastation reaches the scale of an end-of-the-world catastrophe. Once upon a time, I might have felt bad for the Voroshk and the people of Katovar. This time, when I examined my soul, I found not much more than indifference within me.
How much longer before you finished making all your modifications? Lady demanded.
She was anxious to head north. From oblique remarks, I gathered that she wanted to rejoin the main force before disaster struck it. What she could do to avert a disaster was beyond me. She did not have enough magic currently to start a fire without adding flint and steel to the mix.
10 minutes tops, Tobo replied. There's this one last braided strand that needs reweaving, and will have us not just a completely healthy Shadowgate, it'll be the toughest there ever was. Tough enough that what happened to the Katovar Gate can't happen here. In fact, it's already all those things. What this spell rope is going to do is create a little pocket of darkness that's invisible from outside,
so killer shadows can be turned into invisible sentries. They'll be there ready to jump out at anybody who tries to get through who isn't already approved by us or Shivetya.
Neat, I said. Lady scowled. She was determined to believe that we were placing too much trust in the golem. She seemed unable to recognize that trust was not a large part of this equation. She said, "We're going to have company in a minute." I looked up. Two Varoshk sorcerers were coming down the slope, following the old road, inside what would have been protection if they had not blown up their own shadow gate. A third post rider remained a dot above the horizon, a remote witness. I asked, "You think they did more damage getting through the barrier and onto the road?" After only a glance, Tobo said, "No, I think they came in the far end and flew here, following the roads. The other one paced them from above." Admirable stupidity, I thought. The two at ground level had no chance of getting back out before dark. Did they think we would protect them from the night? If so, they were huge daydreamers. The Varoshk dismounted 100 yards away. They walked toward us like walking was a foreign experience. Riding the flying fence post had to be a huge status symbol back in Kadovar. So huge, walking was never done where your inferiors could see you. "How long now?" Lady asked Tobo. 15 seconds. After that, I'll fake it for a bit. Then we all step back through the gate. Are Dad and the others alert?" Alert was not strong enough a word. A variety of missile weapons were ready. So was one fireball projector, but it would not see use while the Varoshk remained on the plain side. The barriers could be damaged by fireballs. Arrows and crossbow bolts, however, could pass through, and the wounds they made would heal in moments. Not that arrows were likely to accomplish much against these chunky old men. They did seem overweight. They projected an aura of fatness behind the constant stirring of their black cloaks. "There, I think that should do it," Tobo said. Click, click, click. That swiftly we three backed through the shadow gate into our own world. Tobo sealed the way. We waited. The kid said, "One of these will be the father of our two troublemakers." Probably. The Varoshk did appear interested in communicating. They knew someone on our side spoke the language of the Forvalaka. Their luck was in. Of all the Black Company people who could have been there with Tobo, they got me and Lady. They would get no happiness out of that, though. Their kind rubbed me the wrong way. I would make nothing easy for them. Chapter 48. The Shadow Gate. The Warlords of the Air. These Varoshk, who actually introduced themselves as Nashun the Researcher and the First Father, both spoke the language of Juniper. Nashun the Researcher had by far the best command. Neither had social skills of a sort likely to put a smile on the face of many mothers. It was clear that the demonstration of manners toward persons outside the family was an exercise with which they had little familiarity. After the introductions, I stated the obvious. "You people sure got yourselves into big trouble." You could feel the Varoshk closing their eyes and sighing inside all that black material. "We will survive," the boss Varoshk declared. He strained to keep anger and arrogance out of his voice. He had less success with confidence, which made me wonder if he did not really mean it. "No doubt. What I saw of your family's capabilities impressed me. But honestly, you realize that your family's survival will require more than just fending off the shadows." Nashun made a dismissive gesture with one gloved hand. "We come to you because we want our children back." He spoke clearly and slowly enough that Lady caught that. She made a surprised little noise that might have been half a laugh. "You're out of luck. They may prove useful, nor have we any incentive to give them back." Their anger seemed a palpable force. Tobo felt it. He said,
Warn them that any power they use to try to break through will bounce back at them. Tell them that the harder they try, the worse they'll get hurt. I translated. Our visitors were not impressed by anything a boy said. Neither did they experiment. They did recall events at their own Shadowgate. The researcher said,
"We are prepared to make an exchange."
"What do you have to trade?"
"You still have people on this plane."
"Go for it. They're covered. When the dust settles, you'll be picking up dead family members." Of that I was confident, because Tobo trusted Shivetya completely. "You're powerful but ignorant, like an ox. You don't know the plane. It's alive. It's our ally." Smoke should have rolled out of their ears. Goblin sometimes did that in the old days, but these men had no sense of humor. Their desperation overcame their anger.
"Explain," Nashun hissed.
"You know nothing about the plane, but you're arrogant enough to believe that your power will be supreme there, in a realm of the gods. Evidently, you don't even know your own world's history. The people you're facing, that you believe you can threaten, are spiritual descendants of soldiers sent out from Katavar 500 years ago.
"What happened before the Voroshk does not signify. However, you demonstrate ignorance of your own."
"It is of consequence. You want something from the last free company of Katavar, and you don't have anything to offer in exchange, except possibly that disdained history and a little contemporary knowledge." Neither man commented. Lady told me,
"Ask them why they want these kids back so bad. They're safe over here."
I asked.
"They are family," the first father said.
His voice had a quality which made that seem not only plausible, but possibly even true. I said, "They're a long way away. They've been traveling northward steadily since they arrived. One is deathly ill."
"They have their right, Geistiden. They can get down here in a few hours."
"I think this guy is for real," I told Lady. "He's really got some mad-ass notion that I'd give those kids their toys and turn them loose just on his say-so. They sure don't have to work to survive in Katavar." The researcher picked up the one word.
"I mentioned your ignorance. Listen, outsider. Katavar is not our world. Katavar was one city of darkness where damned souls worshipped a goddess of the night. That evil city was expunged from the earth before the Voroshk arose. Its people were hunted down and exterminated. They have been forgotten, and they will remain forgotten. Never will any soldier of darkness be permitted to return."
Once upon a time, on a lazy day, ages before he had become the vessel he was now, Goblin had told me that I would never get to Katavar. Never. It would remain forever just beyond the horizon. I could get closer and closer and closer, but I would never arrive. So I had imagined I had set foot in Katavar. But I had only been to the world where Katavar had existed once upon a time.
"Time itself has evened the score. That which Katavar sent out came back, and the world that killed Katavar will die."
"Did you catch that?" Lady asked.
"Huh? Catch what?"
"He used the word evil. We don't hear that much in this part of the world. People don't believe in it." "These guys aren't from this part of the world." I returned to the language of Juniper.
"Given a complete working breakdown on the construction and operation of your flying logs and of the material from which your clothing is made, I'd say we could give you what you want."
Lady did her best to keep the others up to date on what was being said. She did not always get it right. Nashun, the researcher, could not grasp the enormity of my demand. He tried speaking 3 different times, failed, finally turned to the first father in mute appeal.
I was sure his hidden face was taut with despair. I told my guys, "It might be wise to back away from the Shadow Gate. These people are about out of patience." I felt wonderfully wicked. I always do when I frustrate overly powerful, responsible-to-no-one types who think all existence was created only for their pleasure and exploitation. I told the Voroshk, "It'll be dark soon, then the shadows will come out." And as the Voroshk exchanged glances, I borrowed from Narayan Singh, "When dealing with the Black Company, you would do well to remember, darkness always comes." Lady's expression was one of less than 100% approval when I turned away. That could have gone better. I let my feelings intrude. I should know better. But talk wasn't going to get us anywhere anyway. They think too much of themselves and too little of everyone else. "Then you're giving up the dream of returning to Katavar." The Voroshk made their first furious attempt to bust through the Shadow Gate. I did warn them. They did not want to listen. It was worse than I had imagined it could be. It was worse than Tobo had predicted. The counter-magical blast hurled both sorcerers all the way up the slope to the edge of the plain, bouncing and tumbling all the way. By some miracle, neither broke the barrier protecting the road. Maybe Shivetya was watching over then. One still had shown no signs of recovering when I gave up watching. I told Tobo, "I reckon it's time to go now. Those guys might have gotten the message this time." I did not look back. The trials the Voroshk faced left me confident that they would never become a problem to my world. As we descended the hill, I asked, "Anybody think there might be a connection between the Shadow Masters and the Voroshk? They seem to have gotten their start about the right time, and the Shadow Masters tried to sever all connections with the past in Sien. It was just too big a job. I wonder what we'd find out if we talked to some ordinary farming stiff over there." "I can ask Shivetya," Tobo said, "and the prisoners." But he did not sound particularly motivated. Chapter 49. Nija, Place of the Dead. Sara kept calling for more torches, as though bringing in enough light would nullify the disaster. By the time the captain arrived, there were 50 torches, lamps and lanterns illuminating what had been a stable before the company arrived. "Strangled?" Sleepy asked.
"Strangled."
"I'm tempted to use the word ironic, but I fear there's no irony in it at all. Doge, that white raven of Croaker's was hanging around outside. Find it. There were little people hanging around here, some of them supposedly watching Singh. I want to know what they saw." Sleepy had a good idea what she would hear from the unknown shadows. It would be a variation on reports she had had before. She said, "I want to send the news south, too. Nothing happened around the Black Company without some Habya there to witness it. The soldiers from Sien understood that perfectly. They took it for granted. They tended to be well-behaved. But someone without experience of life in Sien would not take the unknown shadows as seriously." A minute later, Sleepy asked, "I don't suppose anyone's seen Goblin, have they? I don't reckon anyone knows who was supposed to be watching him." Riverwalker said,
"He was right over there till a minute ago."
Sleepy looked, considered, muttered, "No doubt right up to the second I decided to consult the unknown shadows about what they saw." Which would have been the same moment he would have realized that his recent history was no mystery to anyone. The moment when he realized that Sleepy had been paying out the hangman's rope while seeing what she could learn. Riverwalker asked,
"Want him rounded up? In one piece?"
"No. Not now. Not when the best wizard she had was an old, old man whose skills, outside using a sword, were too weak even to put hexes on people and animals. But I wouldn't mind knowing where he is. Doge could manage that. The unknown shadows communicated with him, sometimes, when the mood took them.
What you do need to do right now is get extra guards around the Voroshk. Goblin showed a lot of interest in them while we were traveling. I don't want anything happening to them, and I don't want them wandering off. It did occur to her to reinforce the company responsible for the comatose sorcerer Howler, but fortune stood behind her there. Goblin, it developed, had grabbed a couple of fast horses and some loose supplies, and had gotten himself out of Nija, headed north, all without attracting any particular notice. Sleepy very nearly indulged in profanity when she received the report. Someone pointed out that the little wizard always had had that knack. Sleepy growled. Then somebody should have been watching for him to take advantage of it. Uncle Doge told her, I can't stop him or control him, but I can make life miserable for him.
How?
His horses. The black hounds can have a lot of fun with them, and when he tries to lead them to water, he chuckled wickedly. Send them. Sleepy beckoned Sara.
I kept leaning both ways during the meeting, looking for a sign. I've just had it. We're not going to rush in any more. We'll move ahead slowly, into more hospitable country, and stop somewhere where we can support ourselves without much trouble. We'll wait till everyone catches up, and issue a call for volunteers willing to support the Prabhrindra Dra and the Radisha, if anyone even remembered them.
Wait especially for my son.
Yes. Sara was angry and unhappy, but too tired to fight much. Now that Mergen is no longer the major tool.
Especially for Tobo, yes. Tonight it was clear that without Tobo, we're in trouble bad.
Sara said nothing more. She was tired of fighting a battle in which even the men she wanted to protect refused to honor her concern.